morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Winicky and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, firekeepers of the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. I would now like to introduce the Dean of the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University and Lewis A. Bantle Chair in Business Government Policy, Dean David Van Slyke, to introduce this morning's speaker.
Thank you so much, Emily, and good morning, everyone. It is my honor to introduce my friend, colleague, and SU Maxwell alum, Mayor Ben Walsh. Ben Walsh is the 54th mayor of the city of Syracuse. He was elected in November 2017, taking office on January 1st, 2018. Mayor Walsh is a native of Syracuse and currently resides on the west side of Syracuse with his wife and two daughters. He is the son of former congressional representative James Walsh and grandson of former congressional representative and Mayor William Walsh. Prior to running for mayor of Syracuse, Ben worked for the McKenzie Hughes Law Firm, doing economic development work and assisting small business owners as they navigated through the complexity of the startup process for operation. Ben spent 6 years working for the city of Syracuse as deputy commissioner for neighborhoods and business development. The notable projects he worked on were the establishment of the Greater Syracuse Land Bank and the renovation and opening of the Hotel Syracuse. He also worked for the Metropolitan Development Association, a precursor to CenterState CEO. He has served on boards and community groups, including serving as president of the Gifford Foundation Board, which he still serves on at this time. In 2009, Ben was named one of Syracuse's 40 Under 40 winners, an award recognizing Central New York professionals and leaders under the age of 40 who exemplify leadership in the community. Mayor Walsh faces re-election this year, 2021, and will again run as an independent. He faces several challengers from both the Republican and Democratic parties: Michael Green, the Democratic Party nominee, Khalid Bey, who is challenging Michael Green in a June primary, and Janet Berman, the Republican nominee. Mayor Walsh continues to work on the Syracuse Surge, a transformational plan to bring the city of Syracuse into the smart city high technology era, along with investing in the South Quadrant of Syracuse for economic development and revitalized neighborhoods. Finally, I would be remiss if I did not say that Mayor Walsh is a graduate of the Master's in Public Administration program at the Maxwell School and has been an active guest speaker in our Veterans Program in Politics and Civic Engagement, our classes, and a number of our executive education programs, for which we are deeply grateful. Ben, take the stage.
Thank you so much, Dave. It was a really nice introduction. And it's wonderful to be with all of you. I'm looking at the pictures. I'm seeing some familiar faces, some that I haven't seen in a long time, a lot of familiar names. So it really is nice to join all of you this morning. I mentioned to Dave and Emily before I started, I was on drop-off duty this morning, which is one of the many adjustments I've had to make and we've all had to make with the pandemic. So I drop the girls off. I might be a little out of breath, but I am here and really excited to share some news with all of you. So when thinking about what I wanted to present, I thought, given the timing of it, that it would be helpful for me to give an overview of our city budget. So I have presented our city budget to the Common Council. They have been holding budget hearings over the past few weeks, and we are hoping to have it adopted in early May. So it'll give you a good sense of where we are and hopefully where we're headed. So just to start off, and I have my colleague, Tejana Cerruti, who's identified as Ben Walsh with the other Ben Walsh on the screen, is running the slides for me. So if you hear me mention Tejana's name, that's why. So I thought it was important, both when I presented the budget initially and now, just to remind everyone that we are still in a pandemic. I know many of us are painfully aware of that, but you know, as the weather gets nice, as the vaccine continues to get rolled out, I think sometimes we forget that, and we need to continue to keep our guard up. We need to continue to do all the things necessary to keep ourselves and our community safe. I mentioned the vaccine. It's critically important that that people get vaccinated. You understand that there continues to be some hesitancy. I tell people, don't listen to me. I'm a politician, but listen to your healthcare provider, listen to your doctor, and you will hear that it is in fact safe, and will help us get to some sense of normalcy soon, hopefully. But needless to say, the pandemic has impacted virtually every aspect of our lives. But as it relates to city government, it's been devastating in a number of different ways. Of course, there's the human toll, but financially, fiscally, it took a significant toll on the city of Syracuse finances. When you look at our two largest sources of revenue, you have sales tax as our largest source. And when you shut down the economy, sales tax obviously declined significantly. And then state aid. And the state was not immune to these issues either. So it has it's been a difficult year, but we are seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, both as it relates to the health impact and the fiscal impact of the pandemic. And I look forward to sharing more with you on that. Just as I want to try to center myself and everyone around the pandemic, I also find it important to center everyone around our vision. So my two first orders of business when I became mayor were surrounding myself with an amazing, diverse team, and I'm very proud that we've been able to do that. And then for that team to establish a vision. So our vision is for Syracuse to be a growing city that embraces diversity and creates opportunity for all. So that's our North Star. That's everything that we do is focused on bringing us closer to that vision. And just to break it down a little bit, again, at the beginning, we want to be a growing city. We need to grow. Have not grown according to most metrics over the years, but we need to grow. But to the end of the vision statement, we need to grow in an intentional way that creates opportunity for all. Far too often when we do grow and we see investment, it benefits too few in our community. And so we have to make sure that we are benefiting and helping everyone. And central to that vision statement is embracing diversity. And that speaks for itself. We have an incredibly diverse community. It's a strength that we need to lean into and leverage. So in addition to a vision, we established four objectives. Again, that help to guide our work. Our four objectives are to achieve fiscal sustainability, to increase economic growth and neighborhood stability, to deliver city services effectively, efficiently, and equitably, and to provide quality constituent engagement and response. So again, I wanted to just provide that context for how we for what guides our work and what guided our budget planning. So let's talk about the budget. Some fiscal realities, some things that we've already that I've already acknowledged. Overall revenue growth has been stalled. So sales tax is picking up, but it has largely been stalled recently. State aid we had a significant amount of state aid withheld over the past year that has loosened up. And so we are getting back to, we're closer to normal with state aid. Including recently, we have anticipates on the slide, but state aid was in fact stored at 71, right around 71.8 for the fiscal year. The budget does anticipate continued growth in revenue for city and schools. That's largely based on assessed valuations going up. If anyone's been paying attention, with property tax being our third largest source of revenue, it does provide some additional revenue and then benefits the city of Syracuse government, but it benefits our schools, which is a priority. And I want to acknowledge the significance of the American Rescue Plan. If we did not have the American Rescue Plan in place, we would be in big trouble. Biden and Congress step up and deliver the critical aid to our municipalities, to our essential workers. Again, I can't overstate the significance of that. And I'll talk more about how that impacts us. But I do want to specifically about our Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer. He has been a champion for our state and for our community for a long time, but to have him in the position of majority leader, again, I can't overstate the significance of that. The important thing I want to note is, again, that we're using $20.7 million of the American Rescue Plan funding to balance the budget to offset continued revenue loss. And prior to the pandemic, we were on a path towards balancing the budget. So it's frustrating that we're in this position, but certainly grateful to have the funding to help balance it this year and likely next year and get us back to a point where we are in a position to balance our budget thereafter. A couple other highlights, no property tax increase. Again, property tax revenue is important, but we're hurting, everyone else is hurting. We didn't think it was the right time to be looking at a property tax increase. And the goal here was to get our service delivery level back to a point where our constituents deserve. So investing in housing quality, public safety, schools, parks and recreation. The other thing I want to note for those of you that are real budget wonks is we introduced a new tool called Balancing Act this year, which some of you may be familiar with. The school district uses it. It's basically an online platform that gives you a chance to dig into the city budget, to move some numbers around, to get a better understanding of the difficult decisions that that are often needed in order to develop a $264.9 million budget. So to go into the next slide, I just want to reiterate that aside from the $20.7 million, this budget does not reflect the administration's plan for how we intend to spend the vast majority of the federal American Rescue Plan dollars. So we are engaging with a number of different stakeholders right now, community members, counselors, community-based organizations, and intend on introducing our plan for the American Rescue funding probably within the next month or so. So I look forward to talking more about that. So a few highlights in terms of investments that we're making. Obviously, there's been a lot of attention on the tragic and really horrific situation at the Skyline. And so we can go to that slide, Tejana. We've learned a lot from this situation. You know, I think it's important to note that we've been battling the owners of the Skyline really since I took office, and we have a long list of actions that we've taken between primarily code enforcement and law enforcement. The reality is, it wasn't enough to stop the horrific murder of Ms. Torrey, and it wasn't enough to give the residents of that property a safe, clean place to live. And so our work continues. And we've also, we've acknowledged that we need to find new and different ways. We've used every tool in the toolbox on this one, and it hasn't been enough. So we need to create some new tools. One of those is what we're calling our home unit, which you can see the acronym there, High Occupancy Monitoring Enforcement. What we found is we had an informal arrangement where we had interdepartmental collaboration between SPD, SFD, codes, neighborhood and business development. We thought that it was important that we formalize that relationship and also apply the lessons that we've learned on Skyline to other large high occupancy properties. And so that is, we have specific funding in the budget, including for some new staffing and codes and fire to build the capacity of this unit. We've already formalized it. We were out just yesterday. We did a surprise inspection of the Vincent Apartments, which is another green-owned property. And we will continue to do those and make sure that we're holding property owners accountable and ensuring that the people that are living in these high occupancy complexes have, again, safe, quality, affordable housing. So more to come on the home unit. On a related note, we are also expanding the Bureau of Administrative Adjudication, or the BAA, to resolve more code violations. So we created the BAA a few years ago. Over the past few years, we've been building its capacity. But basically, it does what it says it does. It administratively adjudicates
code violations that prior to the creation of this would have ended up in the court system, which, you know, where we already have a significant backlog of violations that we're pursuing. So we are increasing staffing at BAA so we can do more tickets and more hearings. And the BAA will begin, they're going to create an online platform to streamline hearings and begin making payments, accepting payments online. So we are looking forward to seeing a lot more activity from the BAA. It's led by Leah Whitmer, who some of you may have crossed paths with. Leah's been a great addition to our team, and she's doing great work at the BAA. Also making significant investments in our parks, trails, and urban forests. So I think I like many, really, as much as I already loved our public spaces and parks, this pandemic has given me a renewed appreciation and greater appreciation for our parks and public spaces. And we need to continue to invest in them. So this budget does that. In addition to overall investments in grounds and trails, we're also investing in some creative programming. We had to get creative over the past year and do different types of events during the pandemic. One example over the winter is we had pop-up snowshoeing in different parks, which was a big success. And so we looked at what other opportunities could we do different unique pop-up events in different parts of the city. One fun one is that this year we're going to be doing kayak rentals. So this is up around Onondaga Park and Hiawatha Lake, and we're actually going to be doing kayak rentals in Hiawatha Lake, as well as probably over at the Inner Harbor. Some fun activities at our parks. I mentioned our trails as well. So hopefully all of you have been on the Creek Walk. And hopefully you've been on the most recent extension that takes you south from Armory Square down through Kirk Park. It's a beautiful section of the city and of the Creek Walk. You can see an image of it here. With that new asset that we have, we need to take care of it. One thing that I have observed both as a citizen and as mayor, we're pretty good at making significant capital investments in this community, but we're not always good at taking care of them. And so we want to make sure that we are maintaining these assets that we are creating. And so we are going to have a dedicated staff person that will oversee the cleanliness and overall conditions of the Creek Walk and the Empire State Trail, which of course goes east-west along the old Erie Canal route, developed by the state, but will be maintained by the city. So that staff person again will be focused solely on our primary trails. We're also going to be reinstating a supervisor position in the Parks Department to oversee overall appearance and aesthetics of our parks and public spaces. So they're going to work out of our city greenhouse, which is in Lower Onondaga Park. They are going to be trying to ensure that all of our public spaces, from our big parks to our little corner green spaces and grass strips, are well maintained, are planted, and again, just overall addressing the aesthetics and the beauty of our city. Also related to parks, we are going to be building a couple new playgrounds, one at Grace Messina Park and another at the Onondaga Geddes Play Lot, which is one that I spent a little bit of time at as a kid. Most of my time was in Upper Onondaga Park, but on the corner of Geddes and Onondaga, there's a little play lot there that is very underutilized. And our parks team got really creative, partnered with our forestry department. We're going to be creating the first natural playground, so built out of all natural materials, working with the forestry department and constructed by city carpenters. So we're doing some community engagement around the design right now, but it's going to be a really neat new public space and park. Continuing on the parks theme, we are reopening all of our city swimming pools this year, with the exception of Burnett, which is going to be undergoing regular maintenance. We had an incredible response from the community last year when we were only through our contingency budget able to fund the opening of two pools. We challenged the community to step up and help us open two more, and the community overwhelmingly responded. We partnered with the Parks Conservancy. We raised over $100,000, and it was just incredible. Again, during in what was a very difficult year, that was certainly a highlight for me and for this city. And and when I visited those pools and saw the looks on those young people's faces and their families, it made it all worth it. So thank you to everyone again who helped us do that. And now thankfully we're in a position to do it ourselves. And so again, all of our pools with the exception of Burnett will be open. Public safety, something that is of critical importance. We are investing in our fire and police departments. We have funding in place that will allow for us to have new classes for both the fire department and the police department, academy classes. The fire class will be the third since I've been mayor. We actually have one that's going to be graduating, let's see, a week from tomorrow, and then, or maybe it's tomorrow. Anyways, very soon. And then we're gonna do another fire class to make sure we're keeping up with retirements. In the police department, overall, the police department's budget is flat, but we are going to be having another academy class. We've had a significant amount of retirements and resignations to the tune of, I think, around 40 since the beginning of 2020. And so we need to get our police department at a level that we can provide the public safety services that our city needs. So again, we have a class in SPD that is being vetted right now, but this budget will provide us with to be able to put a class on right on the heels of that to get us back up to a more adequate staffing level. The budget also allows for us, in addition to doing all the regular policing work that SPD does, to do some other special assignments. On the topic of police reform and police community relations, we're investing in developing a new police athletic league through the leadership of Jimmy Oliver, who is new to the police department. Again, it's just another model of a way for us to enhance the relationship between police and the community. And the budget also funds some important crime and safety details. Our gun violence suppression detail, which has been doing a great job for us getting guns off the street. Our neighborhood burglary details. So each division captain now has a budget that they can apply for special burglary details to address spikes in different neighborhoods. We will have special details dealing with street racing, particularly on Erie Boulevard, dirt bikes and ATVs, something that we hear a lot about. It's happening in cities all across the country, but it's a significant quality of life issue and a safety issue, as is fireworks, which, we're coming into fireworks season here. And last year was the worst year I've ever seen with fireworks in the city. And so we're going to have a special detail working on fireworks as well. We also were able to reinstate ShotSpotter, an important piece of technology that we use to track shots fired in the city. Quick time check here. We're doing fine. I mentioned quality of life. It's a consistent theme and area of focus for our city. We are investing in our Department of Public Works and actually establishing a new environmental services division that is specifically focused on cleaning up the city and overall beautification. So we're going to be adding some new staffing to staff up the environmental services division specifically for litter cleanup. And this is in addition to all of the work that DPW is already doing. I'll be the first one to acknowledge that part of the reason we continue to struggle with litter in the city is because of the way in which we pick up trash and recycling. And so that is another big item on our to-do list, is to develop a better way to do trash pickup in the city that results in less litter around the city. But I'm hoping you all will see visible signs of the investments that we're making in beautifying the city. Also related to DPW, I've been talking about it for a few years now, and we are on the precipice of finally establishing a citywide municipal sidewalk program. I've acknowledged from the beginning that the city's current sidewalk program is broken. Putting the onus on property owners to maintain and repair their sidewalks just doesn't work for us. And it exacerbates inequities that already exist in our community. You go to nicer neighborhoods, you tend more affluent neighborhoods, you'll tend to see better sidewalks. You go to lower income neighborhoods, where people need the sidewalks, arguably even more, and you would often see them in disrepair. So we want to take over responsibility for sidewalk maintenance that will result in a fee, a relatively modest fee to property owners to help us with that. We're also looking to use some of our American Rescue Plan funding to get us out of the block with the municipal sidewalk program and hopefully result in it costing property owners nothing, at least in the first year, so we can get off the ground. But transportation equity, making sure that the city is an equitable place to move around, whether you're in a car, you're on your feet, you're on a bicycle, or using public transportation, is a priority. And we think that a municipal sidewalk program can really be a game changer in that regard. And it really treats sidewalks as the public good that they are, as opposed to just, a personal property. Nobody just uses the sidewalk in front of their house. You use a lot of sidewalk. And so we're going to treat it as such. A few other highlights. We are going to be making some significant investments in information technology and cybersecurity. Our Syracuse Surge strategy is our strategy for inclusive growth in the new economy. And a lot of that is based on investments in technology infrastructure. But we need to make sure that we have the systems in place here in City Hall to manage that new technology infrastructure, not to mention the infrastructure we already have in place. And cybersecurity is an increasing threat. So we are actually increasing the IT budget by about 50%. We could make a sound argument that it's still not enough, but it acknowledges that it's a long overdue investment, and it's critical to supporting and providing a foundation for all the other work that we are doing. I mentioned the Balancing Acts tool. So I think on the next slide, you'll see a URL. There's a visual of what we're talking about. So as you can see, it breaks down the budget in different categories. And so you look at salaries, you click on the I there, and you can dig into department salaries. And again, it gives you a sense of, just look at the visual there of how much salaries take up of the overall budget. You realize how much of that is just people. And so it, I think is a great educational tool. And I'm also hopeful that it is a baby step towards a participatory budgeting process. We want to empower the community to be more directly involved in our budgeting process. And we think starting with some education and some engagement this year is a small step in that direction. So finally, I want to come back to the American Rescue Plan funding. Again, you'll be hearing from us over the next month in terms of our plan, where we continue to engage stakeholders. But I just wanted to give you a sense of the framework for how we are looking to spend these resources. First and foremost, it is intended to focus on recovery, and city government needs to continue to recover. So there are a few things that we're going to look to first. Our workforce, our essential employees, have been incredible over the past year. They've stepped up. They've done more with less, and they've made some sacrifices. We had two furlough days already for virtually almost all city workers. Other workers had extended furloughs. We were able to cancel the other two scheduled for this year. But we want to make sure all of our workforce is made whole for the sacrifices they made. So we're going to make an investment there. We, again, are going to focus on offsetting revenue loss. So that will help us balance the budget and also get our fund balance or our reserves back to a place where we think is sustainable. And then after that, we're really going to look to how we can make transformational investments that move the needle, that address some of the barriers that were in place even before the pandemic, that will help us, again, to achieve that vision that we laid out early on. So looking at investments in infrastructure, including technology infrastructure like broadband and Wi-Fi. We know we have a significant digital divide in this community, and we see this as a really once in a lifetime opportunity to bridge that digital divide. So we'll be looking to make investments in those areas. In housing, I mentioned the housing market right now. We need more quality, affordable housing in the city. And so you're going to see a significant investment in housing. And there's a number of other areas as well. So that planning is ongoing. But again, I see this for what it is. It is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I'm not talking about my lifetime. I'm talking about the city's lifetime. And we need to maximize this opportunity. So we're taking it very seriously. I am committed to making sure that, again, we rise to this moment, and in doing so, really put the path, put the city on a path towards that vision that we laid out. So in closing, before we open it up, and it looks like we're doing great on time, it's been an incredibly challenging year. For all the difficulty, all the pain, and all the loss that we've seen, I've also seen our community step up in incredible and amazing ways. I'm really proud of how our community has managed the pandemic. I'm proud of our community's leadership. I'm proud of my relationship with the county executive, with our leaders at the state and federal level. I think that alignment and leadership did help us and has helped us through this pandemic. Doesn't mean we always agree on everything, but we've been able to work things out throughout the time. Again, I think our community is better off for it. When I took this job, I was really bullish on the future of the city of Syracuse, and I'll admit that at times, especially over the past year, my hope and my optimism has been challenged. But as I sit here today, as the vaccine continues to roll out, as our city comes back to life, I could not be more bullish and more optimistic about the future of our city. We have all the ingredients. We were firing on all cylinders heading into the pandemic. The pandemic has been a blow to us, but I really feel like we're in a position to pick up where we left off and really accelerate our progress forward. So I know that many of you in this meeting are an important part of that. I want to thank you all for your partnership and your leadership, and I welcome the opportunity to answer some of your questions. Thank you. By the way, this picture is one of my highlights of my time in office. Actually, Tejana, if we can just go back to that. So that again is Hiawatha Lake. There it is right there. And I grew up a couple of times ice skating on that lake. And I got together with some of my friends, and we had an amazing pond hockey tournament last winter. And this past winter, we had to put it on hold because of the pandemic. But hopefully, as long as the weather cooperates, this is going to become an annual event, which is just a lot of fun for the city. Okay, now I'm done.
Thank you so much, Mayor. So first question, actually, we'll go to the Hiawatha Lake picture. Will the city clean up and clean out Hiawatha Lake and stock it with fish?
So there's a lot that we need to do there. Probably the most important thing we need to do is to repair the wall around the lake. And we do have some funding in place to do that. We may need more. And again, we're looking at how we can maybe use some of the new funding to assist with that. I also, one of my dreams, and I'm showing my bias now of what side of town I live on, but one of my dreams is to actually restore the old lagoons in the park. I have an old picture on my wall over here where the lagoons were actually filled with water, and I'd love to go back to that. In terms of stocking it, I know that there are fish in there. Growing up, there used to be a fishing derby there, and we'd had conversations about bringing that back. So if it needs to be stocked, that's certainly something that we can look at. But yes, we're working on it.
Great, thank you. Next question, will the playgrounds be fully accessible to children with disabilities?
So that is a priority for us. So yes, any new playgrounds that we are building are built to be accessible. Obviously that's a challenge with existing playgrounds we have. But yes, we are trying to be much more equitable and accessible in our parks. So the short answer is yes. I'll mention on that note, I didn't mention it in the presentation, but one of our other initiatives is we have a new office. It's a virtual office now in city government. The acronym is IDEA, stands for Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Accessibility. And Deputy Mayor Owens is overseeing that office. We're in the process of staffing it up. But on that accessibility note, we do want to take a holistic look at how we deliver our services, including we're going to be launching a new website soon, and we've ensured that we're adhering to all best practices for accessibility online. But it's something that we're going to be looking at across the board with our city services.
Great, thank you. So we've got a couple questions about partnerships with the city. So first, is the city still able to partner with support programs like Higher Ground and Tiny Homes?
Yeah, two great partners, Andrew Lunetta and John Tomino do great, great work. I drive by the Tiny Homes on Bellevue Ave every morning, and I just love the community that has developed over there. So yes, we work with them regularly. John Tomino and I are in regular contact. I was texting him about an individual just the other day. Another significant impact of the pandemic has been that the toll that it's taken on our most vulnerable, including people with mental health and substance abuse issues. So we are going to continue to support John and his work through Higher Ground, which is intended to give people that either are homeless or maybe are just on the corners panhandling, give them the dignity of work, and as part of that, help connect them with services that can help address whatever they're dealing with. We also, related to mental health, use some of our funding that we received in the CARES Act, which is limited, but we did get some community development block grant funding, and we use some of that to engage Liberty Resources to do more proactive mental health outreach on the streets over the course of the next year.
Great, thank you. Next question related to partnerships. Is the city planning on utilizing and partnering with local organizations to achieve its goal of community engagement, empowerment, and outreach?
Emily, can you just give me the first part of that again?
Sorry about that. Is the city planning on partnering, utilizing local organizations?
I mean, I think the short answer is yes. We can't, all of this work that I'm talking about, we can't do alone. As part of, just as an example, with our ARP funding, we have a whole list of community-based organizations and partners that we're going to be engaging in these efforts, so we make sure that we're putting the resources where they're most needed. But we're always looking to leverage our resources and partner, and also just try not to invent the wheel. We have great organizations in this community doing really important work. We don't want to duplicate that work. We want to support it and leverage it. So yeah, the short answer is yes.
Great, thank you. Shifting gears a little bit to deal with police. So there's been a lot of criticism of the proposed police contract. What is your response?
Yeah, so I think this is a good contract. A lot of the attention has been focused on on cost and for good reason. Police department is our most expensive department, but I looked at this contract as an opportunity to support a number of other efforts that we've been undertaking, including police reform, and to advance some priorities that we've heard loud and clear from the community, starting with city residency. How long have we been talking about having police officers live in the city? And you know, we've pursued multiple different paths to get there, including state legislation that we're hopeful we might get some action on. But we had an opportunity through this contract to negotiate a residency requirement for the first 5 years for our police officers, similar to what we have in the fire department. And that is not only a priority for me, more importantly, it's a priority for the community. And I'll just say anecdotally, I've spent the past couple of weeks knocking on doors. It's petition passing season. I can't tell you the number of young firefighters that I've met just in our neighborhoods, and they're buying homes. They have families, and I think that it can really be a game changer for our police department. But we're also accomplishing a couple other priorities. We have incentives in there for multiple languages spoken, obviously important in a diverse city like Syracuse, for continuing education. We know that that's a critical component to 21st century policing. And so those are incentives that we're providing. But also we're addressing one of the biggest challenges right now with the police department, which is retention. As I mentioned, we've lost 40 officers just since the beginning of 2020. And while I'm not trying, I have no desire to create, you know, a police state or to overstaff our police department, we do need to have an adequate staffing level to not only provide the patrol services that we all see, but all the other important work that we don't see. We have arguably one of the best criminal investigation divisions, essentially our detectives, in the country. Our solve rate for homicides is off the charts. And a lot of those areas have also suffered from retention loss, or from the loss of officers. So yes, it is a significant investment, but it's one that, again, I think aligns with our priorities. It helps us continue to make progress in building police community relations, in reforming our department. And it's, in my opinion, it's money well spent.
Great, thank you. Sticking with police, you mentioned the new classes. Are they including minorities in purposeful sense? If not, what efforts are you using to recruit more minorities? How is this effort to groom police recruits through the PSLA at Fowler Criminal Justice Program been successful?
Yeah, so the new police cadet program at Fowler is not yet off the ground. We announced it earlier this year, and it will be. The fire cadet program is already up and running, and we're going to continue to improve that. We think that will help with having more homegrown candidates from our diverse city. But we've also been very intentional in our recruiting efforts. Chief Buckner, it's been a priority of his. He's engaged. He's reached out to a lot of community-based organizations to assist us in those recruitment efforts, from La Liga to the NAACP. He's working with some of those organizations to actually conduct classes for people to practice test taking for the civil service exam. We've been very intentional in our recruitment efforts. It's an ongoing process, and it's a challenge. It's understandable given what's, you know, given not just recent history, but the history of law enforcement's relationship, particularly with Black and Brown communities. It's understandable why members of those communities may be reticent about joining law enforcement, but we are beginning to break down some of those barriers. Again, Police Athletic League, the cadet programs, a lot of the community engagement we're working is all that we're doing is all intended to break down some of those barriers.
Great, thank you. Next question, what is the plan for summer youth employment this summer?
Great question. We've got big plans. So that was a priority coming in to office. In the first couple of years in office, 18 and 19, we substantially grew our summer youth employment, working with partners like CNY Works, On Point for College, the Allen Foundation. And last year, again, like many other things, we had to take a step back. This year, our plan is to employ more young people in our city than we ever have. So it's a work in progress, but I'm really excited about it.
Sounds great. Thank you. Mayor, do you have any comments about 81?
Tear it down. So needless to say, I've been a long and passionate proponent of the community grid option. It's happening. We're getting there. The state is going to release their revised draft environmental impact statement sometime this summer, which will be followed by some public hearings, or at least a public hearing. But the state has determined that the community grid is the preferred alternative. All signs from the Biden administration and Secretary Buttigieg suggest that they understand the legacy, and specifically the racist legacy of many of our federal highway and transportation investments. And I think we are completely aligned in our collective desire to undo some of the harm that was done in the past. But it's also worth acknowledging that it's the best transportation option. The transportation data backs that up. And I think the sooner that the collective we in this community can accept that decision and actually focus on some of the other concerns that people have, whether they, you know, these are concerns that existed, that exist today and will exist after the community grid unless we address them, whether you're talking about, you know, in the eastern suburbs, in the southern suburbs, or in the northern suburbs. So these are all manageable issues that we can work through, but we need to actually come to the table and work through them and stop with the press conferences and the, and the, you know, the new ideas. We're past that.
Thank you. One more question, because I want to be respectful of everyone's time. What is happening with Rezone Syracuse?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's one of those initiatives that frankly, I've been frustrated that we haven't been able to get it done sooner, but we are, we introduced our rezone plan to the Common Council last year for a variety of reasons, and I think some good ones. We've received a lot of feedback from councilors and the community about things that still needed to be tweaked and improved in rezone. We think we're pretty much there, so you're going to see some public engagement in the coming weeks on rezone, and I hope to have it the council ready to vote on it in the next few months.
Great. Thank you so much. So please join me in virtually thanking Mayor Ben Walsh.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.